The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. Round 3 of the NFL playoffs coming up, a.k.a. championship weekend. I'm still reeling from round 2. Somebody else is reeling from round 2, our friend cousin Sal. Sal, are you alive?
Still licking my wounds here, Billy boy. I don't know what happened this weekend. I really don't.
Well, I can tell you what happened. For the first 3 things to happen, there were 29-1 odds on that.
Yeah, that's right. And then it would have been 97-1 for the Chargers to upset the Steelers if you added that.
Yes, and both of us played those odds and went with the Steelers money line, figuring that if we were going to lose on 101 odds, then it was a worthy bet.
Right. I mean, but it hardly mattered. I mean, didn't you feel like you were watching, after watching football all year, now they changed the game and it was like highlight, and you have no idea how to bet these games, and it's disgusting. It's turned into Major League Baseball, where just, you know, if you could somehow make the playoffs even at 8-8, you could win the whole thing on the road. It's stupid.
I know. I feel like I've wasted 20 weeks of my time. I really didn't enjoy the games this weekend. Forget about the fact that we lost. Just that there's just no rhyme or reason anymore. I mean, we might as well just have video games, play the playoff games.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just that it doesn't matter at all what you did for 17 weeks. And I'm just so disgusted. I really am. I mean, it's you're right. It's like baseball. It's whoever gets hot for 4 weeks wins it. And well, but the only thing, two things bug me. First of all, I blame myself for not seeing the Cardinals, because they really, all the signs and they handled Atlanta and, you know, Carolina, that division maybe in retrospect wasn't as good as we thought. The loan given that many points.
Yeah.
The nobody believed in us factor. That's the one pick I regret. But, I mean, how am I supposed to feel bad about picking the Titans in that game?
No, you can't. The Titans? Oh, the other one?
No, the Titans. How am I supposed to regret that Titans pick? Like, I would pick them again.
Exactly. I mean, Kerry Collins looked like Marino in that game. He was torching that defense. He had close to 300 yards. It made no sense. I mean, if Chris Johnson doesn't go out, the Titans probably don't fumble at the end and win somehow. But honest to God, that Ravens team completely reminds me of the Giants of last year. Like, they handled the Dolphins. They were better than the Dolphins, but it was still a pretty good showing, just like the Giants beat Tampa.
Yeah.
And they go into Tennessee, and they do nothing to win that game. They really did nothing in the second half, just like the Giants did in Dallas, as I remember. And now, whether they're better or not, I think they could be the team of destiny here.
I was trying to think of 5 plays that Baltimore made to win that game.
Yeah.
Obviously, the long pass to Mason in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
The hit on Crumpler, even though there's no way a 300-pound tight end should ever fumble the ball because he got hit by a defensive back, still you got to give the guy credit for hitting him on the ball.
Right.
And then the delay of game pass where Flacco, you know, 2 seconds after it went to zero, and he threw that pass over the middle to Heat. But that was still a nice pass. Granted, it took him 38 seconds to run the play.
Sure, yeah.
How did they miss Flacco stepping out of the end zone on third down?
You know what? Our friend Dave said he saw a replay. I don't know where he saw a replay of this, and he said it wasn't even close, that he was in the end zone.
He was
still in bounds, yeah.
Oh, interesting, because they never showed a replay of it, and it really looked like he stepped out.
That's what I thought, unless it's just the paint job in the back of the end zone. I thought he was, you know, at least a foot and a half out of bounds, but our friend said he saw it. But either way, bad job by CBS not showing that. There was another personal foul, like a roughing the quarterback that they didn't show. Like, I don't know. There were a lot of weird penalties this weekend, and it seemed to be all against the teams that I bet on. But,
well, the Ravens.
I don't want to be a downer, but I've never rooted for a season to end like I am this season. It's just such a mess, you know?
I know. I have to say, by the Giants-Eagles game yesterday, yesterday. I was like working on my book as the game was going on. I was like half interested. I just assumed Philly was going to win and the Giants for, you know, we're just going to throw away everything they did in the regular season, which they did. Eli Manning, you know, this guy who orchestrates one of the greatest comebacks in Super Bowl history now can't throw the ball 15 yards in the wind.
Yeah, right.
Last year he could go in a Lambeau Field in minus 10 degree weather and beat the Packers, but this year can't handle a little wind at Giants Stadium.
Yeah. Team scored 10, 13, and 11, was it? And
right.
The 13 was a garbage touchdown at the end.
San Diego has the biggest special teams advantage in the league and gives up a punt return touchdown with a 7-0 lead.
Right. You can't get. But you and I, back to the Panthers real quick for a second. Like,
I'm not ready to talk about it. I can't talk about it.
I know. But the
I can't talk about it.
We're in that pizza place. We're watching the Titans game. We had our stupid a fantasy football banquet at Shakey's Pizza.
Shakey's Pizza, underrated.
Hollywood. Yeah, it actually was. It actually was. But anyway, you and I are talking. After that Ravens game, I looked at you, you know, Panthers to win by 18-21 is 12-1 odds, and to win by 22+ is 10-1 odds. And we looked at you. We were gonna pull the trigger, and then I just forgot about it.
And
I'm driving
too.
Home during the first minutes of the first quarter, and the Panthers go down and score on four plays, and I pound my dashboard. I'm like, why am I so stupid? Why am I not betting the Panthers by 22+ points? It's an oversight. This is when you need to make money. And little did I know, I needed Arizona by 20. Those were the odds to go by. So I really just don't know anything. I feel naked.
I want to know what world we live in where a number two seed coming off a bye week going against a 9-7 team takes a 7-0 lead at home and loses by 20 points. That's almost impossible against a team that has no running game. I mean, everybody's like, oh, yeah, Arizona, they're mixing up the run and the pass. They're running for 3 yards.
They can beat any team by 20 points, the Cardinals, let alone the 8-0 team that went 8-0 at home.
And on top of it, what kind of game plan? I mean, forget about Delhomme, who really probably had the worst player performance of all time in any sport. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see the list of, John Starks, Game 7, 94 finals. That's really the only performance I can think of that I've ever witnessed that was worse.
Right.
But forget about Delhomme. Larry Fitzgerald's the only guy in the Cardinals who can hurt you. Mm. How is that guy running amok in the first half? Why aren't you quadruple teaming him? Let Edgar and James beat you.
It makes no sense that he's open on the 14-yard out every single time.
Quadruple team him. That's what the Cardinals did with Steve Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, they said from the get-go, look, Steve Smith's not beating us. Beat us with your runners and beat us with Musain Muhammad. Now, God forbid the Panthers ever ran the ball. They're running the ball for 5 yards a pop, and for some reason that game almost got me drinking, smoking, and just was one of those games where you come home 3 a.m. like Charles Barkley.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what you do. Maybe we take a page from the college, you know, BCS, as much as everyone kills it. Like, if a team lost by 40 points like the Cardinals did to your Patriots, all right, you know what, they just can't be considered. Forget about it. I don't care if they're 15-1 or what, but they lost by 40 points or whatever it was, and they can't be considered for the postseason. Let everyone else play. Because if the Panthers win, now we have a good Final Four, right?
Yeah, but do we blame ourselves a little bit for...
No.
I've been writing this since week four that this was the goofiest season in 6 years. This was a ridiculous season. The road teams, the way they're covering was unfathomable, all the weird stuff. And then it gets to round two, and I took three of the four top seeds and picked. I still don't regret the San Diego pick. I know Pittsburgh looked great.
Maybe we wouldn't give the 10 points anymore, but I don't care what year it is, if an 8-0 team like the Panthers, who's just getting hot, by the way, it's not like they've played some lousy games down, it's just getting hot at 8-0 at home, playing a team that, you know, didn't beat anybody good and was lackluster on the road, I'll take them to win on a teaser every single time. I'm sorry. I don't care. I may have to sell my Emmy to pay the bookie off here, but I don't know what I'm going to do. But it's you got to go with it, right?
Collinsworth was the only guy who even attempted to make a case for the Cardinals because he did the whole, I watched the tape, and I'll tell you, they were throwing on the Panthers. They were. And I think this game's going to be closer.
Wow.
But even he wouldn't pick the Cardinals to actually win.
No.
And where is the Kurt Warner who just decides to put the ball on the ground twice a game.
Yeah, he needs
what
to
happened to that Kurt Warner
in the pocket and then and throw a few tip passes that go our way. I don't know.
I've had it. I'm ready. I don't know what I do as a sports fan, but I think this could be it for me in football. I might get into tennis and women's soccer.
I feel the same way. Like, I don't know why anyone would listen to us talk, like, pretend to pick these next three games.
They're not. You know, I don't think anyone is listening to us.
In fact, I don't ask for much, but if you've subscribed to this podcast on iTunes, I ask that you unsubscribe, because we don't know what we're
come
talking
on
about.
I need the subscriptions.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I don't need
not
them financially, but
they're losing a lot of money if they're at all listening to us.
Well, and now, tell me if this is a bad sign. I'm now getting requests from teams fans to pick the other team.
Yeah.
I'm getting Eagles fans are begging me to pick the Cardinals and vice versa. That's probably a bad sign for how my column's gone this year.
Yeah, everyone's picks-wise. A wise ass. Everyone's a wise ass. I don't know.
I still don't understand the mentality of people who root for a team and then decide they have to log on and email somebody who picked against them.
Yeah, well, that's all they have. That's all they have.
It's a little weird. It's slightly strange. Before we get to the conference games, did you see Golden Globes last night?
I did. I watched most of it, I think, yeah.
What'd you think?
I love Tracy Morgan, the funniest guy in America. And
yeah.
I think it's great that Mickey Rourke won. Although they cut up that West Coast feed for us.
They really did.
Husky just like he shot him the finger, and they cut that out, and then they would bleep and stuff went to black, but... he was great. He's thanking his dogs and stuff. That's what it should be all about. I just hope
it was good.
For the Academy Awards.
You know what, though? I didn't know why it went black because I hadn't read any of the stuff yet. So
yeah.
When it went black for like 6 seconds, I just assumed Rourke had like pulled his pants down or something. I didn't realize it was something as innocent as a middle finger.
Yeah, right.
But it was pretty exciting. The one thing, and I guess like I read Nikki Fink's blog today about it, and she's pretty connected, and she seems to think that the different companies pay off the foreign whatever.
Oh, is that
cause,
what it is?
Well, because she was like, you know, Gabriel Byrne for In Treatment over John Hamm and Mad Men. Come on,
right?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then John Adams won all those awards. I don't know anybody who finished John Adams.
No, I know.
I know people who started John Adams. I don't know anyone who finished it, and it won like 4 awards, and then and Recount.
John Adams wouldn't watch that show. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, John Adams has condemned the show, and he's dead.
Yeah.
And then Recount, Laura Dern won, and then after Recount was released, all this stuff came out about how it was inaccurate.
Mm-hmm. Watch that Revolutionary Road and tell me if anyone deserves they should be shot. Forget about an award for any part of that movie. I mean, and I love Leo like no one's business, but that was a piece of crap.
When you say you love Leo like no one's business, what does that mean?
I don't know. Everything he's in, I get excited for. It's terrible. I know.
You know why, though? Because you cried after Blood Diamond.
I cried before Blood Diamond because I saw it the same night.
Romo game.
Watched a snap against Seattle, and I probably cried after too. I cried that whole week. Yeah.
I thought you and I have seen all of these movies because we get the screeners.
Yeah.
Because we're the Writers Guild, which is one of the really greatest things ever.
Yeah.
I thought Winslet was amazing in that movie. I didn't
Did
like
really?
It.
Really?
I didn't like it. I didn't understand what the point was other than to make me question my own marriage. But I thought she was really good.
Well, if that's what her goal was, to make you not understand what the point of the movie was, she did a great job.
It's not her fault.
I thought it was a bad Mad Men episode. I really did. Even though it wasn't really the same job, I thought it was, I don't know. It just never went anywhere.
Speaking of Mad Men.
We used to root and watch football. I remember that. Now I don't know.
Well, with it looks like your fantasy football dream, which was really one of the greatest ideas I think anybody's come up with this decade.
Yeah.
It's now really in the process of happening. The Jennies won our league, and now they're going to vote somebody off in September.
Yeah.
And we're adding a 10th team. Mm-hmm. Do we know who the 10th team is?
It's John Hamm of Mad Men.
Oh, that's right. The Drapers. We're adding the Drapers.
Yeah.
And, we're going to potentially get Jeff Probst to read who gets voted off.
To pull the name, yeah. If he's around, if he's in town in L.A., it'd be great. I think we can get him to pull the name and and tell who gets voted out of the league.
And you want immunity at Shakey's Pizza with some game where a Nerf ball drops out of some machine and lands in different circles, and you had the most points, and you won. And you reacted, I guess, kind of like Dante Culpepper after he was throwing TDs during the 0-16 season. Like, you almost went to your knees, you're pumping your fist. You're pretty excited.
One of those idiot referees would have thrown a flag at my reaction, for sure.
That was really the only good thing that happened to you all weekend, other than the Steelers bet.
Yeah, no, it was good.
So you have immunity, but before the vote, Jeff is going to give you, he's going to give you the old, now you can either pass that along or you can keep it for yourself, and then you could do the smile and go, I'm going to keep it for myself,
yeah,
Jeff.
Yeah, well, first I'll pretend to give it to you or something, but then I'll pull back at the last minute. So
who do you... I mean, the Jennies have been very close-lipped about who they're voting
on. There's talk of you getting voted out. There's talk of Hanschy. There are two camps. The one camp is what would be the funniest, who would get the angriest if they were voted out, and therefore that would be the funniest. The other camp is, well, who deserves to be out? The guys who don't watch the games with us every week. And
why is that the number one requirement for who gets voted out?
I don't know. It's not my hands anymore. Not my thing.
I might just sabotage it by just leaving the league before the vote.
You can't do that.
I might. The only way I can have control over the process. Well, I'll just say that, you know, the team that won is the Jennies. One of the co-owners is our friend Jamie, who was my first intern. I talked him out of going to Boston College and talked him into going to North Carolina, which was the single best decision he ever made. I talked him into moving LA, even though he was too scared and wanted to stay in Boston with his friends. And he moved out here. He has no regrets. He has a nice job. And if he votes me off, God help him. God help him in the karma department. God help him.
Well, I think he's a forget. I don't know if it's karma or what, but he's for sure afraid of you. And I think for that reason, you're not going to be voted off. That's what they want you to think.
I just think karmically.
Yeah.
It's a terrible decision. I know he listens to the podcast, but holy mackerel. I mean, I compared it at Shakey's. I compared it to Rocky V when Tommy Morrison turns on Sly Stallone.
Right.
And I actually think it's worse.
Is it? Wow.
Yeah, because Jamie's not HIV positive.
Oh, God.
That's a Tommy Morrison joke. Come on.
I know.
It's been 18
years. I got you. You might be building a case, though, for them to vote you out now.
I hope they do, because when Jamie is, like, on Skid Row in 5 years, he'll remember the moment when it all turned for him.
I love it. Thank God I have immunity. Ugh.
Also, Tall John got mad at me because I sent an email, and I spelled his name J-O-H-N.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was like, that's a point against you. So these guys are basically going to milk this whole...
Oh, it's
everything you do against us is going into the file, and we have to act nice with them for like 9 months.
Yeah, it's going to be a miserable night.
How is Brad going to handle
this? It's going to be worse than pregnancy, I would say. I'm going to say that to all the women out there.
How is Brad going to handle this?
Brad walked home after the Giants lost yesterday. He had his dip and his two bottles of water and like three newspapers from God knows when, and he walked home, which is probably what? To Hollywood from Jimmy's house, probably... A good 4 miles or something.
Just thinking about Eli Manning and wondering why he lost the ability to throw the ball in the wind.
I said, he's like, is anyone leaving? Because I'll take a ride now. I'm like, you know what? It's a strong move as a Giant fan if you walk home. He's like, you're right. I'm going to do it. And he gathered his belongings and left.
So what did he do? Like, I mean, that's like a dangerous walk. You have to go down Cahuenga?
Yeah. Yeah, he said he was flailing his arms like cars were stopping, looking at him, but he was like really mad, reliving the game and walk home.
I try to think the only ways you could walk home from Jimmy's to where Brad lives, you'd either have to do the off the exit on 101, the Highland, that street, which is like where the Hollywood Bowl is, or go down Cahuenga, which is like really, even when you're driving, one of the most treacherous roads in the United States.
He probably did both. Yeah, he didn't know where he was going.
Wow, that's pretty good. Hey, are we having him on today or no?
Oh, I don't think he's around. I don't know.
Oh, all right. Well, we got to get his thoughts maybe next week. We'll have an extended Mad Brad. Let's go with the conference.
All right,
conference
Eagles, Cardinals.
These picks, but I don't know the answers yet.
You sent me the lines last night because it's too hard to avoid. Philly at Arizona. All right, I said -2. I said Philly -2.
I said Philly -3.
You said Philly -3. It's Philly -3. And it's a strong, it opened at Philly minus three, so you're right. It's pushing towards 3.5 this morning as of Monday morning.
That was an easy one for me. I just looked at that and immediately thought Philly by three.
Yeah, that was dumb. I don't know why I said that.
Can I ask you a question? How come I can pick the line so well, but I can't pick the games?
I know. Well, I can't do either, so at least you have something going. Mm. This is such a crap. This would be a crappy first round game, right? Like if this were Saturday night, a first round playoff game, I might TiVo it and take the wife to the Olive Garden and then like watch it or not watch it when I got home. Like I can't believe this is a championship game. I just can't believe it.
Well, I remember we were together on Thanksgiving and that night's game was Philly, Arizona, and neither of us were like, "Hey, where are you watching the game tonight?" I mean,
right.
It was like, I guess I'll tune it on. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm fully confused by the Donovan McNabb resurgence and what made him care versus, I mean, really, that's all it took to get benched?
Yeah.
You got benched for a half and you've reinvested yourself emotionally as a quarterback and a teammate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's just about not screwing up in January. It's like you don't even have to be a big playmaker now. Just don't screw up and you're all right. Flacco, all these guys.
Yeah. Are you going to miss Tony Dungy?
Has he announced it yet?
Yeah, it's 5 o'clock today. We're taping on Monday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I think he's going to throw a curveball at us and stay. Yeah, no.
No, he's leaving. And what's crazy is, so now no Dungy, no Shanahan.
Right.
So
that's interesting.
Two of the three big AFC guys.
And who they say, maybe Holmgren and, those are big names to be gone all of a sudden.
Holmgren's out. Who else did we lose? We lost Cromio. That was a tough one.
Cornell is gone. Well, I said, I think, on the podcast last week, Dungy is, 7-6 in the playoffs.
He
should count his blessings, I think.
I think he should. Who do you like in that Philly, Arizona? Do you not want to give a pick?
I want to say Philly, but why has Philly been in Arizona at this point, you know? It's like Larry Fitzgerald looks like he should have 45 touchdowns this week. I might just take both underdogs.
Do we get Bolden in this game?
I think he'll probably come back for it. He practiced last week and didn't play, so who knows? What are you like? You don't want to say yet.
No, I don't mind telling you where I'm leaning. The one thing that worries me about this game is the just taking Arizona and then watching Philly blitz the hell out of Warner and him just putting the ball on the ground like six times.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my fear. The other thing, for some reason, I just have this weird feeling. I can just see like the all Pennsylvania Super Bowl could be.
Yeah, I know.
Can you see that?
Sure.
That's never happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and then all the angles will be one of the most economically ravaged of the states. And
that's
a good thing. And I, for some reason, I could see that.
Well, yeah. I mean, one thing's for sure. The Cardinals aren't going to take anyone by surprise anymore, right? I mean, the Eagles have to, like they did the Panthers, so. And maybe it's just a bad matchup, but would you seriously say I love anything the rest of the way?
No. And what's more interesting is that I don't think there's any team with nobody believes in us potential left.
Yeah, right.
Because the Cards definitely had it, and I think the Eagles had it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you look at the Super Bowl odds. Arizona's, I'm not giving away the spread to the second game, but Arizona's 5-1. The Eagles are 3-1. I'm trying to think. Eagles are 3-1. The Ravens are 2-1. And the Steelers are 1.5-1.
Well, how mad are you if like in mid-November, you made a bet on the NFC, like giving three, thinking like, oh my God, the Giants.
Yeah, you're right.
Or the Panthers, and then you end up with Arizona in the Super Bowl.
By the way, it's only right now, AFC is minus three right now, so you could still jump on that.
If it's Pittsburgh, Arizona, that line's going to be, between 7 and 10.
Yeah. And the Ravens will win the Super Bowl if they get there, too, so I think that's safe. What do I know? Well, everyone's unsubscribed anyway, it doesn't matter.
Let's talk about the second game.
All right, Ravens, Steelers. You said 4, I said 6. It's 5. It opened at 5 and is now 6. So we tie that because it opened at 5. So
that makes sense, I guess.
That's about right.
I thought four only because it seems like people are really high on this Baltimore team, even though they really didn't do a lot to win that Tennessee game. But
listen, the better team doesn't have to win. That's one thing we've learned, and often doesn't. So I might close my eyes and just take the Ravens here.
Hey, you know, it's funny. I was getting emails from people thanking you for your tip in the podcast to just pick all the underdogs.
Did I say that?
Apparently you did, and I was like, well, he didn't listen to his own tip, I could tell you that much. But, if you did that, I think you said something like, if you bet all the underdogs and you go 2 for 4, you win money.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So after Saturday, you were set, yeah.
Yeah, well, then the Eagles, too.
Yeah, the Eagles, right, on Saturday, Sunday.
Well, is there a tease that would have won this week?
Every underdog cover, even the Chargers covered on a two-team teaser. Like that last score miraculously got you a win. So every underdog covered on a teaser. But what are you talking about for this week coming up?
No, I'm saying the last week. Like anyone's putting Carolina in a three-team.
Yeah.
So all those people lost.
I had them with everything. I had them with Texas Monday night. I had them with Florida Thursday. I loved it. I'm like, oh, this is great. I could just move on to Sunday.
They're
up 7-0. This is a blowout. Forget about anything else.
I had them with the Cavs on Friday night, which is one of your least favorite things that I do.
That was good. I know. I couldn't do it.
When I bet against my own team, but I only do it if I know they're going to lose.
I know. Well, the thing is, in your defense, your lock of the year for 08 was the Celtics over the Lakers.
That lost.
Christmas Day. And then you come back with another lock of the next year, 10 days later, with the Cavs over the Celtics. I know. I wish I would have jumped on that.
I urge everybody to drop whatever they're doing and bet on the Cavs to win the title because LeBron is going to win. And I've been trying to tell people this for 2 months, but after what I saw on Friday night, the Celtics, unless LeBron gets injured, the Eastern Conference is now bye-bye until 2018.
All right. Well, Bill doesn't know what he's saying.
I'm just telling you.
I don't know nearly as much about basketball as you do, but I think you're concussed from this weekend's football game.
No. I'm telling you, this is Jordan. We are headed toward Jordan the sequel. And
really?
Yeah, we are. It's official. His performance on Friday night was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. He was all over the place. It was like nothing that has ever happened in a basketball game.
Yeah. Wow.
So there you go.
All right. I believe you.
We'll talk to you next Monday for the final Mega Playoff podcast.
All right, Bill. Take care. I'll talk.
Thanks, buddy. All right. Let's go to one of the only people who was like relatively happy with the events of the weekend for gambling picking purposes. Our friend Aaron Schatz, the founder of FootballOutsiders.com and a guy who all season has been saying, the numbers don't add up. The Eagles should be better than this. The Eagles should be better than this. And then they were better than this.
Yes, I have said to people reading Football Outsiders that we should tampen down the DVOA triumphalism until we know that the Arizona Cardinals will not be appearing in the Super Bowl. We can't pretend that we know everything as long as that team is still winning games.
So you basically, with your picks the first two rounds, you went 6-2, and the two losses were the Arizona Cardinals.
That is correct, yes. The Arizona Cardinals, who, I mean, I suppose we have to, you know, consider the idea that this team really did just kind of stop caring for half the season.
Mm.
But it seems like a long time to not care and to play that badly because you don't care. And even when they did care, they had no defensive performances as good as this. I mean, these last two games have been two of their three best defensive games of the year by our ratings. And the other game that would qualify was way back in week two. So, I mean, I don't know where this defense is coming from. Oh, they're just playing really well.
All right, let's figure this out. So the Colts in the 2006 season, they do just terribly in your defensive DVOA and all that. Every defensive stat you have points to them just being awful.
Every standard defensive stat points to them being awful,
right,
especially against the run. You know, obviously that was more just the run as opposed to in total.
And they turn it on for 4 weeks and win the Super Bowl.
Although there was a little bit of an explanation because of the injuries and the return of Bob Sanders. And the Colts were like the St. Louis Cardinals when they won the World Series a couple of years ago. They were a team that had been winning for years and happened to have a, you know, not as good regular season, but it's not like that team hadn't been winning for years. So, you know, all that happened was that it was as if they were coming off the 2005 regular season instead of 2006.
So you're saying the odds came around with them in a weird way?
Yeah, in a weird multi-year way.
Okay.
This Arizona team is a lot more like last year's Giants, where it's, where the heck is this coming from?
Right. So I was going to say, then last year the Giants, out of nowhere, just round into Super Bowl shape.
Right.
Where do you rank the Steelers in 2005? Would you put them in that category?
I think
no?
The Steelers in 2005 are like this year's Eagles.
Okay.
They are a team that was very good all year, that had a worse record than they should have because of a couple of unfortunate losses. For them, it was, for example, the game where Tommy Maddox had to play quarterback and did nothing but throw it to members of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Right.
I mean, they were third in our ratings that year, and they beat the teams that were 1-2 on the way to the Super Bowl, but it's not like they were a, you know, mediocre team that snuck their way into the playoffs. So that's a lot more like this year's Eagles or even this year's Ravens, not like the Cardinals.
So the last year that really made total, complete sense was the year the Pats beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl.
Yes, although 2005 isn't that crazy. The Steelers were a really good team that
year. Okay.
And they beat three other really good teams.
This is the craziest year?
This is pretty nuts. Because the thing is, you know, even with our ratings coming out at the end of the regular season, that Philadelphia Eagles were the best team in the league this year and Baltimore was number two, we still believed in things such as home field advantage.
Yeah.
I mean, what happened to the home? What? I mean, I know you've been writing all year about home field advantage being less of an issue this year than it has been in years past, but it seems like the last couple of years in the playoffs, all those things we used to believe, the bye week is so important and home field advantage is important, is they've all just kind of gone out the window.
And I stuck to my guns by taking three of the four home teams. So that was great.
and the one you didn't take,
the one I didn't take last,
was the one that won.
Yeah, I give up.
I will tell you, I went back and looked at the playoffs for the last few years, and there's really no, you know, I mean, I realize I say there's no precedent for such and such, and, you know, teams have been breaking precedent all the time the last couple of years, but there's only one team that had five takeaways in two straight games. I got lazy and didn't count special teams here, so I'm just counting offense and defense. That was the Ravens in 2000.
Mm.
So the Cardinals had six takeaways this week. The chances they're going to have, you know, six takeaways against the Eagles are tiny. Teams that had at least five takeaways in the playoffs since 1995, the next week averaged two.
And none of those teams ever played Jake DeLome.
No, well, you know, they play. I mean, the thing is, those teams with all those takeaways, the ones that had all those takeaways in a championship game, you know, mostly went on to win the Super Bowl, the 04 Pats and the 98 Broncos. The ones that had all those takeaways in earlier rounds mostly went on to get crushed the next week. Like, remember the week that Jacksonville beat Miami 62-7?
Yep.
Then they lost the next week.
Mm-hmm.
They had like six turnovers in that game, but they lost the next week. So teams that have kind of depended on turnovers for playoff blowouts have, for the most part, it hasn't carried over into winning the Super Bowl.
The only weird game, or not, I shouldn't say the weird, the only game that I think if they played 10 times, the team that lost wins 9 out of 10 is Tennessee. That was just the weirdest game, and Chris Johnson goes out and all the fumbles, they controlled that game. And
well, I mean, if they play that game with that quality 9 out of 10 times, Tennessee wins. I think if they played that game more often, Baltimore would have better offense more often. But it was a weird – in our ratings, Tennessee played better. They got kind of just – you know, they got screwed by the luck fairy. I mean, Baronis misses a field goal he almost always will hit. They lose their best offensive player for the second half. Nearly every fumble gets lost to Baltimore when usually you'd have kind of a 50-50 split. The weird things like Al J. Crumpler deciding to go vertical. I have no idea where that came from.
Yep.
So, yeah, Tennessee.
The delay of game penalty.
You know, we had a conversation on Football Outsiders about making delay of game reviewable. It's the kind of thing that, you know, coaches would throw the hanky maybe four or five times a year. But those four or five times would be really important. I think that, you know, I can't say I'm unhappy to see Baltimore doing well. As far as I know, before the season, we were the only people who thought they were going to make the playoffs. So every time they win, it makes us look good. But Tennessee outplayed them. And Tennessee got kind of screwed.
Why wouldn't that be reviewable? I actually thought they were going to throw the challenge flag and then the
announcer said. Isn't there a whole, like, thing? I mean, certain things are reviewable and certain not. And as far as I know, the only penalty that's reviewable is 12 men on the field.
If I were Fisher, I just would have kept throwing the red flag.
Until
and then the umpire kept getting back, just throw it again
you know,
and throw
Fisher
it again.
Fisher is on the rules committee, so perhaps he could have just changed the rules right then and there. But, you know, it should be reviewable because, you know, the worry about making things reviewable is always, oh, God, it's going to just lead to more stoppages in games. But how often is that really going to be an issue during a season?
Look, I watch as much football as anybody on the planet, and anytime that goes to zero, they blow the whistle. That one, it went to zero, and it seemed like about 5 seconds passed. It was really
yeah,
like a second
general,
and a half.
Yeah, in general, they give guys a little bit of leeway. Usually you'll see that if a guy snaps the ball right after the zeros, they're
right.
Okay with it. But that wasn't right after. That was like 3 seconds after.
Yeah, I mean, I've never, just in general, I don't ever remember seeing a clock just sit on zero for that long. And it was almost like it was like something had gotten screwed up.
Weren't the Seahawks fans upset about a delay of game against Roethlisberger and that wasn't called against Roethlisberger in the Super Bowl, if I remember correctly?
That play
was not as long a wait as this play was.
They were upset about so many things from that game. I don't think you can narrow it down to the poor
Seattle
fans.
I remember there being a delay of game, and that one was not as clear as this one. This one was, you were like, wow, how did they miss that? Mm. When there's a guy whose whole job is to call delay of game. That's his job.
What do you, like, if you had to pick one team, I mean, is it even worth it to pick a team because it's so screwy?
Well, I mean, listen, we play with the world of probabilities. That's what you do when you're a statistical analyst. And even when we're wrong, we go out there and we do it again. Because the fact is that if you count up all the, you know, times we've made picks, that we're right more often than not. So last year, obviously, it looked like a little, you know, I looked like a little bit of an idiot picking against the Giants every week. But I'm going to go out and do the same thing this year. There is no reason to believe that Arizona is a better team than Philadelphia. That doesn't mean that they won't be a better team for one afternoon, but in general, Philadelphia is the better team and should be clearly favored in that game, and the likelihood is that they'll win. Not a guarantee, just a probability. The other game is real pick 'em. I mean, both Pittsburgh-Baltimore games have been amazingly close this year. Why shouldn't this one be any different?
Why shouldn't it be different? Because that was, I think, the weirdest round two in history, and I'm prepared for anything.
Right, but being prepared for anything means it's a pick 'em. I mean, right? I mean, those teams are pretty equal. They have the same strengths and weaknesses for the most part, except that Pittsburgh's quarterback will throw more, but he'll also make more mistakes, and they'll you know, that's going to be really close. I don't see a reason to believe that that game's not, you know, 50-50.
I thought Pittsburgh, by far, looked like the most complete team in round two. They did everything
sure.
I want from my playoff team.
Oh, sure, but, you know, I mean, San Diego also didn't play as well as Tennessee did against Baltimore.
True.
Didn't even play as well as the Giants did against the Eagles. And with the Arizona-Carolina game, you weren't thinking of Arizona as complete because all you were thinking of is this must be the worst birthday present that anybody has ever received in their lives. Jake Mahomes' worst birthday ever. I mean, you know.
What's funny is I was sending the texts about how bad he was to friends, and we weren't even really halfway through the Jake Delhomme stink bomb yet, and we were like, wow, this is one of the worst games
no,
ever.
No, I think
he had like three more turnovers than I know.
Saying this is just like, look, that game to me was like 2005
yeah.
when we went to Chicago, Carolina, and Chicago played cover two, and Carolina did nothing but throw to Steve Smith in an open hole all day. And you're sitting there going, doesn't Carolina remember that? They were there.
Yeah.
They were on the other side that day. Do they not remember that that happened? Why are they playing zone on Larry Fitzgerald? He's sitting in open spaces on every pass. That was frustrating. But then you also have to believe that Philadelphia has seen the footage of the next week's Seattle-Carolina game when Seattle came out and said, Carolina has only one good receiver. They played like this box-and-one style defense on Smith all day, and Delhomme couldn't get him the ball. And Philadelphia might do something similar with Fitzgerald.
I just said that to Sal, who was on before you. I have no idea why Carolina didn't go into that game and say, wow, we cannot let Larry Fitzgerald beat us. If Edgerrin James beats us and if Steve Breston beats us, so be it. God bless him. But this guy is not going to beat us. And yet he was running amok in the first half.
Right, especially because their best defensive players are in the front seven.
Yeah.
I mean, I realize Gamble had a pretty good year, but the best defensive players are Julius Peppers and John Beeson. So if you pay attention to the great wide receiver who does deep stuff, and you kind of trust that if they, you know, try to take advantage of that by sending Stephen Spock over the middle or something, you've got John Beeson there, okay? You trust in John Beeson. The guy made the Pro Bowl, for crying out loud. I just don't get their defensive strategy at all.
The two things that, and I don't know if this is statistically back because I haven't looked, because God forbid I did research.
It's my job.
It seemed like Carolina didn't run the ball enough, and it seemed like the Giants didn't use Jacobs enough. Do you agree with that?
Well, it's hard to say they didn't use Jacobs enough because Ward had played so well in the last few weeks. And let's be honest, we didn't really know how healthy Jacobs was. We kept hearing that he was back to full health, but we don't know if that's true. And given the quality of how well Ward had been playing and the fact that much of the quality of that running game is the offensive line, no matter who the back is, I don't know if I can fault them for playing one back instead of the other. With Carolina, it did seem like, man, they really went away from the running game fast for a team that was one of the two or three best running teams in the league this year. And, I mean, Arizona was stopping it early except for, like, one big D'Angelo Williams run. But still, it seemed a bit odd to me.
I was not happy with the play calling. I just feel like when you have the dominant running game in your home, especially when you have a 7-0 lead, just run the ball.
Yeah.
Pound it down the throat.
After that first drive, I'm like, okay, well, this has been fun. I mean, I thought it looked like Carolina was just going to destroy them.
You guys should look and figure out how many times a number one or number two seed has taken a 7-0 lead at home and then lost by 20 points.
Not a lot.
I bet it hasn't happened.
Because you have to remember that until the last few years, the 1 and 2s hardly ever lost.
Right.
That's the thing. These last couple of years, we've seen a lot of these 1 and 2 losing. Now, we went into this playoffs. We've been saying all season, this is a weird year. There doesn't seem to be one team or two teams that are better than everyone else. We went into the playoffs saying it's going to be about matchups. Almost any team can come out of this. But when we said almost any team can come out of this, the teams that were not included in the almost started with Arizona. That's why that's weird. The Philadelphia thing is not weird. Baltimore winning is not weird. The Arizona thing is kooky.
The team that's kicking itself is Tennessee. There's really not a lot of difference between them and Pittsburgh.
No.
They're basically the same team. And if Pittsburgh beats Baltimore, which I think they will, Tennessee will spend the whole spring.
They already are. They lost that game when they outplayed the other team. They lost based on bounces of the ball in bad directions.
And an injury.
And they can feel... they definitely should feel awful about it because it's not necessarily their fault. I don't know. Does it feel worse to lose like that or to go out like Carolina and play just abysmally?
I'd rather lose the Carolina way because I remember the Pats when they lost in Denver a couple years ago in the playoffs, the Ben Watson-Champ Bailey game.
Right.
And that was one of those games where just everything seemed to go wrong. We didn't get one bounce. We made every dumb play we could make. And we're still kind of in it. And it just – that game stayed with me for a week after. I was so upset. You know, just, God, why did that have to unfold that way?
As opposed to, like, when they used to lose in, like, 1999 during the Pete Carroll era, and you'd get to the playoffs as a wild card, lose by 20, and be like, well, that was fun.
Yeah, like when Zolak just completely killed us in that one playoff game. And I was fine within 2 hours, because it's Scott Zolak. You're not going to win with Scott Zolak. And with the Carolina thing, you know, granted, DeLome had one of the worst playoff performances in any sport ever, but at the same time, he's Jake DeLome, and I think the Carolina fans... After about an hour, we're like, you know what? Why did I trust Jake DeLome? And probably
well, the thing is that the conventional wisdom about him, people always talked about him as if he was some sort of game manager.
Mm.
And he's not. He's a gunslinger. He's more of a Favre type and always has been.
Like a poor man's Favre.
Well, like a destitute man's Favre.
I guess the reason I didn't see it coming with him this year is because I had seen them so many different times. Just heave the ball up and make a big play in big moments.
Well, with Steve Smith, that's likely. And the other thing is that you didn't think they were going to – you didn't think that game would be in the hands of Jake DeLome. You thought it would be in the hands of D'Angelo Williams and Julius Peppers, you know?
And I still wonder why it wasn't.
Yeah, I wonder too.
All right, let's talk about the two games.
Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, Pittsburgh-Baltimore is as close can be.
Well, make a pick.
I would say Pittsburgh is – slightly better just because you have to kind of wonder, think home field advantage must still exist in some tiny amount, and Flacco is still a rookie. But, I mean, those are really, really good. Those both teams are really, really good.
Props to the Pittsburgh crowd. I thought they were great yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm trying to think what the other crowd. There was a crowd this week that I said, wow, like they really came. They really came. I thought the Tennessee crowd really came to play. I mean,
they were good for about,
but they were pretty into it early.
Yeah, they were good for about a quarter and a half, and then when things went wrong by the fourth quarter,
then they
realized
Chris Johnson was in a jacket.
It was Nomar era Fenway Park.
Mm-hmm.
Just everybody, you could feel the tension.
Does it depress you like it kind of depresses me when the ESPN like scroll goes behind and says things like Nomar might maybe sign with Philadelphia if he kind of feels like playing this year?
It's a
doesn't feel like it just ended way too early for him.
It's amazing. Like I look at the book I wrote, and he's so prominently involved in those Red Sox columns, and now this guy's like an afterthought.
I know. It's really strange to think of the Trinity, and he's just like a nothing now. Okay, back to football.
Wait, hold on. Did you wince when Rocco Baldelli took his number?
I didn't realize he had taken his number.
Oh, yeah. Like the Rocco Baldelli era wasn't going to be jinxed enough. He takes Nomar's number.
Oh, God. Let the injuries begin.
Oh, my God. They just put him on the 60 DL list now, even though he's not injured. Just save some time.
Oh, man.
Other game.
The other game being Philly-Arizona, like I said. I mean, this has been a couple of weeks of, wow, Arizona is not as good. But this one, really, Arizona is not as good. I mean, maybe they were sleeping through that Thanksgiving night game, but Philadelphia crushed them.
Mm.
And, you know, right, Carolina and Atlanta are somewhat similar teams. One spectacular receiver, dependence on the running game. The Philadelphia Eagles are a completely different beast. There is no one receiver. There's no running game. I mean, you know, there's a few handoffs to Kirill Buchalter, I guess, if Westbrook's not healthy. They're a completely different animal. They crushed the life out of Arizona just a few weeks ago. Strange things can happen, but I can pretty much guarantee that they're not going to get six takeaways again. Maybe they'll outplay Philadelphia anyway, but, you know, I just think Philadelphia is going to win.
How do you feel about the Bird matchup of the Cardinal versus the Eagle?
But the eagle isn't that our national bird? Should we be patriotic and be like eagles?
What bird is tougher though?
Cardinals hang out in my backyard, dude.
Yeah, that cardinals are nicer, right? Eagles are a little.
There are
more
cardinals
vicious.
In my backyard. Yeah. There are no eagles in my backyard, so eagles seem meaner to me.
Mm.
We have all kinds of stuff running around here, man. I got turkeys and geese and stuff in my neighborhood. People don't realize the Sudbury River is just like the font of life.
And you have a lot of snow.
We have a lot of snow.
Yeah.
Cleared it out before the games yesterday.
Yeah. Well, it was 70 degrees here. It was the one highlight of living on the West Coast.
It'll be warm in Arizona, man.
Oh, that's right.
Arizona Cardinals hosting the NFC Championship game.
Do they?
How crazy is that?
What do they know what the weather's going to be?
Yeah, it's going to be indoors and air-conditioned.
Oh, yeah.
I doubt they're going to open the. Don't they kind of have a rule in the NFL that for playoff games, those retractable domes are always closed?
I don't know. I think it's up to the team for how they want to use that to their advantage.
I thought the whole thing was that they wanted to. What advantage for Arizona? Oh, I don't see that. I have a guess that it's going to be closed. No matter what the weather is.
Isn't if it's warm, isn't that an advantage?
How warm
for the warm
be?
Weather team? I don't know. Maybe it'll be like 75.
But that's not an uncomfortable warmth for Philadelphia.
But then it does the whole thing where
it's not like they're not used to playing in 75-degree weather. They were playing in 75-degree weather 3 months ago.
But they bet their bodies have adjusted to the cold. So 75 will feel like 95.
The 75 can be the temperature in the Philadelphia practice bubble if they want it. I mean, it's
look. I'm just trying to make any case I can think of for Arizona.
The case for Arizona is weird stuff keeps happening, and my God, we went through the Giants last year, and this is weird. I mean, that's the case. I did feel kind of like when Philadelphia won, I felt like, well, the Giants can comfort themselves in their 18-1 T-shirts. And to be perfectly honest, I don't mean that in an obnoxious way. I mean, when you've won a title, okay, so your team loses kind of badly the next year, but
You won the title.
You've got the title. I mean, that's how I felt with the Patriots. Lost it into the to the Broncos in that game in 05. I was like, well, dang, we got three titles in the last 4 years. How upset can I really be? So
I wish I'd felt that way.
And that's the way my friend from Indianapolis felt last year. So the Giants fans, it's kind of the same thing. I don't mean this obnoxiously when I say, you know, don't, you know, you can, you know, feel better wrapped in your 18-1 T-shirts. You guys have a title, and the fact is that Philadelphia doesn't. Arizona doesn't. Pittsburgh and Baltimore do.
I got to say, though, I think I was more upset than the Giants fans yesterday after watching Eli Manning play like a Pop Warner quarterback.
Play like the old Eli Manning. Yeah. He was sailing passes.
Where was Eli Manning?
Too high.
Where was that in Super Bowl 42? It got it opened that wound all over again. It was like it ripped the stitches off.
Two words, Plaxico Burress.
Yeah, damn it.
They're deep, right. The deep ball. Eli has struggled with the deep ball since Plaxico went out. And the fact is he does sail passes, and Plaxico can get those in a way that Dominic Hickson can't.
I'll never get over it.
But he still wasn't as bad as he was yesterday. He was really bad yesterday.
Hey, do you want – we should have our Super Bowl – I guess there's no way to do this. It'd be funny to have our Super Bowl 42 podcast with director's commentary from us. But I guess you can't do that.
Last year's podcast? Listen, I mean
I still get emails about it. Giants fans listen to it and just laugh at how confident we were.
We were confident, but confidence, you know, look, I even said it in the podcast last year, confidence is not, you know, a likelihood does not equal a guarantee. And the same goes for the Philadelphia Eagles this week. Likelihood does not equal guarantee. But the fact is that the difference between Philadelphia and Arizona is so much larger than the difference between Pittsburgh and Baltimore.
All right.
It's very difficult to not pick Philadelphia, and it's very difficult to pick either Pittsburgh or Baltimore because they're both really good.
Aaron Schatz, good luck with the shoveling. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, my man.
Take care. As I've said many times, it's the year of Lombardi, 2009. Let's go to our cleanup hitter who's down in the dumps after a round two that just didn't make sense. Lombardi, how you doing?
You know, I'm great. I always use the conference championship games to kind of figure out what style of teams in the NFL what it takes to win, and this one's just got me completely perplexed. This has got me so messed up, it's going to take me months to figure out.
Well, I'm so flustered, I didn't even properly ID you. Mike Lombardi, one of the founders of NationalFootballPost.com, former GM, the guy we lean on for all our football insight. And now I don't even – I feel like if I lean on you, you're going to fall over. Like it's just been that kind of year.
You know, I still believe this, and it's kind of like you believed in your Minnesota pick last week. I still believe the Tennessee Titans are the best team in football.
Wow.
And I don't, you know, I mean, I know they turned it over, but they had 391 yards against one of the best defenses in football. They did everything they had. I mean, Joe Flacco threw the ball into coverage twice, and they came down with it. It was one of those games that I think Lendell White, the only thing he did right that day was say we could beat them 9 out of 10 times, and I think he's right.
I agree. It was a pick that I don't regret losing. I would do it again. And I also think, let's say they called the delay game on Flacco, incompletion. Tennessee gets the ball back. Baronis kicks a field goal and wins. And so then it would be Pittsburgh at Tennessee in this weekend,
yeah.
Right? Tennessee is giving 3 or 3.5 in that game, which means basically that they are considered even or a tiny bit better than Pittsburgh. I think that I just said Aaron Schatz. I think Tennessee's going to just be kicking themselves if Pittsburgh beats Baltimore, knowing that that should have been them.
Yeah, that's, I think,
depressing.
There's no doubt. I think Tennessee was just. I mean, they're just gonna. They're not going to take a while to get over this one. I mean, Jake Delhomme may have to go to rehab to get over this one, but I think Tennessee as a team's going to have to get over this one. I mean,
well, the
Jake Delhomme game, Bill. I've never seen a quarterback who's 34 years old play like he'd never played football before.
I'm still not ready to talk about it. It was like having my pancreas ripped out of my body, basically, is how it felt. The thing with Tennessee, though, can we at least all agree, you know, and I don't want to sound like sour grapes. I know the Ravens feel, hey, it's football. But if Chris Johnson plays that whole game, they do not beat Tennessee. They just don't.
No doubt. And I think it proved all those people out there saying that Tennessee should have drafted a receiver instead of Chris Johnson. I think that game is testimony to prove that Chris Johnson is really what makes the difference. And I think people lose sight of that. When you run the spread or you multi-formation people, it's the back that makes it go, not the receivers. I mean, I went to the Super Bowl in 2002 because of Charlie Gardner. We had Jerry Rice and Tim Brown, great receivers, but nobody was worried about them. They were worried about Charlie Gardner. And that's what Philadelphia has in Brian Westbrook, and that's what Tennessee had in Chris Johnson. And then when he got hurt, you know, they had this, the horse and buggy attack with Wendell, and that didn't work.
Hey, I mean, you could even say a very poor man's version of Chris Johnson, but even Kevin Falk and what he did for the Patriots, if you take him out of any of those Super Bowl seasons, I think it might be a little different.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's what, you know, everybody wants to run. Texas Tech runs the spread. All these teams in college run the spread. The spread is only as good as the back. And I think the Cincinnati Bengals proved that. When Rudy Johnson was going good, they had a prolific offense with T.J. Hushmanzada and Chad, artist formerly known as Chad Johnson. Now they don't. Rudy Johnson isn't as effective. They don't have the back. And all of a sudden, the offense is kind of falling apart. And that's been my point all year. You got to have a great back if you want to run the spread attack in pro football. And that's something that Chris Johnson gave him, and he was dynamic. And losing him, let's face it. I mean, what did they have? They almost had 300 yards at that. They had 240 yards at the half. They were sensational.
Well, also, if you watch the first half and watching Chris Johnson move around, and he just seemed faster than the Ravens' front seven. Like, they were having trouble keeping up with him. And that was only going to get worse as the game went along. Did the Carolina Panthers run the ball enough, in your opinion?
Well, I think they just got caught up into one of those whirlwind games, and I don't think it had anything to do with play calling. I think it had everything to do with, what did they want them to do? It's third. They're down there in the red area. They run a boot. He scrambles out of the pocket. He makes he sees the guy over there. He makes a bad throw. Gets the ball stripped in the pocket. His whole three-step drop, he hangs onto the ball too long. I mean, this game really, no matter how many ways you want to slice it up, this game falls right on Jake Delhomme. It's his game. He lost it. Had he given him any continuity, a little bit like Eli Manning. Eli Manning couldn't throw the ball in the wind. He couldn't execute a passing game. And those two things affect play calling. Jake Delhomme's performance affected play calling.
Well, but at the same time, like, the Giants are up 3-0. They get that penalty that knocks them back. I think they're inside their own 20. And they have Eli throw into the wind. And he throws a pick. That's play calling. That's a mistake, right?
Well, no doubt. But, I mean, you're counting on a guy who led you to the Super Bowl last year not to make a bad, horrible throw. And I think, obviously, the Giants didn't learn from the game and the win when the last time they played the Eagles that Eli can't handle win. I mean, I think the one thing I take from this about Eli Manning is he can't handle the win. I mean, it's going to affect his game.
We saw it on the first play, the first pass that he threw. The guy was wide open. He threw a duck.
Touchdown.
So at that point, you got to start thinking, wow, maybe we should just ride the Jacobs Ward combo. And I don't feel like they did enough.
No, I think you're right. And I think what happened, look at the end of the half. We talk about it all the time. Game management. Coughlin's usually very good. He's got first and five inside the Eagle territory. He's going to get a surefire field goal to go in the lead at the half. He throws three consecutive incomplete passes, leaves enough time on the clock. Now the Eagles come back down, get some momentum at halftime, and tie the game up. And I think at the end of the day, you know, that's what really hurt them. I mean, they went into halftime, they were behind, and they kind of had a letdown.
And then, you know, they get the turnover. Great field position to start the second half. That was one of those points where if they had punched it in, put a touchdown on the board, the Eagles now playing behind, they need a touchdown to catch up. That game might have – now the Giants can run the ball and set it. That sets up all the other stuff. And the fact that they couldn't punch it in there, I thought was the key to the game. Kind of gave the Eagles life, almost.
Yeah, the Eagles knew that. I think at the end, after that drive, the Eagles knew the Giants didn't have any punch. It's like the boxer that knows the other guy can't knock him out.
Yeah.
And I think at that moment in the fight, the Eagles knew the Giants weren't going to be able to knock him out. And they just gained confidence from that drive. And even though they gave up 3 points, at the bigger spectrum of things, the Giants just knew. And to me, once they didn't do that, I thought the game, the next drive, the Eagles score, get the lead again, I thought the game was over.
I remember when they played on Sunday night, you and I were texting each other, and the Eagles really hung in that game, but by the, you know, end of the third quarter, fourth quarter, the Giants on both sides of the line just overpowered them. And I remember us texting and saying, the Giants are just too big for the Eagles. This is a mismatch. What happened to change that in 2 months?
I think what really happened, and I think you see it in all the running numbers, and when you watch Jacobs run for 11 yards, you see it. The problem is, Eli can't carry the passing game. Now, whether it's because Plax isn't in the game, something to do with that, but his inaccuracies and their ability to catch the football was really something that hurt them. And I think one thing we know about the National Football League, you cannot be one-dimensional and win. You can't be just all run and you can't be all pass. And when Eli can't throw the ball, as good as the Giants can physically beat you up, they couldn't control the ball. Last time they played in the Meadowlands, they're 20% on third down. This time they're 20% again on third down. If you can't control the ball, you can't beat up the opponent.
So the Eagles just stacked the line once they realized Eli couldn't throw the ball?
I think the Eagles were daring him to throw the football and saying, you can't beat us throwing the football. And, you know, last year, hey, he did it. Take your hat off. Eli's a Super Bowl champion because he did it. This year, he couldn't do it. And at the end of the day, you know, the win and his inability to make the throws and their ability to catch the ball. But he, you know, first play of the game, they got the perfect call on, can't make the throw. It kills you. The Eagles build confidence with every inaccurate throw he made. Whereas Donovan McNabb, say what you want, he made every throw. And he just postponed the Kevin Kolb era in Philadelphia from ever starting.
He's had a really good playoffs.
He's been playing really well.
Yeah.
And he covers up all the sins of their offensive line. I mean, third and 19, third and 20, he buys a second look, throws a 20-yard pass to Hank, you know, completes the ball to the receiver, and all of a sudden they get the first down. I mean, his feet, his movement, and his arm have been the difference in the game. I mean, the Eagles are winning with defense and a hot quarterback right now.
All right, so let's try to figure this out. The Eagles look like they're asleep by, you know, week 12, week 13. McNabb has no emotion at all and looks like he's washed up. Andy Reid, you and I think over just about anybody question him the most. Like, is this guy, you know, what's going on with this guy? And now everybody in this team looks to be on the same page. McNabb looks like the McNabb of 5 years ago. I don't understand how this switch can just go on for this team. Like, how could this happen?
Well, I think that when he made the move to put Kolb in the second half of the Baltimore game, which I didn't understand when he did it, but had it been a longer week, he might have gone with Kolb the next week. But the next week was Arizona, and it was a short week Thanksgiving, and he had to go back to McNabb. And then McNabb played well, and then all things started going well. But, you know, I mean, he made that move, I think, with more of an eye on the long-term future than on the short-term, and it's really benefited the short-term and Donovan's long-term now.
Well, now I think he comes back, right?
Oh, there's no doubt he comes back. And I think that he's going to – I mean, you could see every interview he does, whether it's with Deion or anybody, he's going to want to get some answers. He felt like it was unfair for him to be benched, which I did at the time too. I mean, you know, that was a close game, and did he play well? No, but a lot of people don't play well against Baltimore's defense. I mean, they just don't. They turn the ball over. I mean, look, Chad Pennington had all those turnovers 2 weeks ago against their defense. It's tough to throw the ball on them, and I think he felt like he was unkind. But I think there was a movement in Philadelphia to get the Kevin Kolb era started, and I think Donovan clearly put a stamp on that.
Well, that was but that game was the week after the 13-13 Bengals game, and I don't, you know, I think McNabb was on thin ice anyway, and he did nothing in that Ravens game really to make anybody think that he was potentially going to turn it around. I can't remember. Usually with football quarterbacks, you kind of know when it's over. I don't remember a football quarterback just flipping that switch on, being this guy who all of a sudden is scrambling around, is playing with fire and intensity. I don't get it. I'm confused. Like the DeLome thing. You know, it was weird. He's completely self-destructive, but at the same time, I'm not totally shocked. I'm more mad at myself that I didn't even consider the possibility. This McNabb thing, I'm flustered by. I could see them winning the Super Bowl.
I could see them easily, you know, going. I mean, he's hot. Their defense is playing at a level that is very tough to deal with. And, you know, I mean, hey, I never gave the Arizona Cardinals a chance to win last week in Carolina because I thought they had reached their utopia. I thought they reached their moment when they beat the Falcons. But, look. You know, anything. I wouldn't sell the Cardinals short right now because the way they played Carolina and dominated them.
What did you think of the Pittsburgh San Diego game? Other than Pittsburgh's good,
I think Pittsburgh's tough to play, and I think that it's hard to generate a lot of consistent offense against them, and you can't really run the football on them on a consistent basis. You can have a drive or two, but once that game got to 21, it was over. It's hard to get, and I know the Chargers scored 24, but that was more the Chargers knew, the Steelers knew their opponent was the clock, no longer the Chargers, and so they allowed some points to happen. But, you know, the Steelers team is good on defense. They're possible to run the ball. You can't throw it on first down on them. they're very good. And I think the only thing that the Ravens can do is they know how to play them, and their defense is good too. So this game is going to be in the teens. And, you know, one thing about the Ravens, they know how to win a close game because they're lucky to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, hey, they can stand in the locker room and say, hey, we beat the best team in football. And so anything after them is easy.
Best coaching staff in this Final Four?
The best coaching staff in the Final Four, I think what the Steelers do, I think is probably the best. I think the Baltimore Ravens have the best staff. I think Rex Ryan will be a head coach in the next month in the NFL season. Cam Cameron is outstanding as a as an offensive coordinator. And John Harbaugh, I think he's turned the Ravens around from being the Ravens defense to being the Ravens team. So, you know, I'm going to go with Baltimore. I think Pittsburgh's very good, especially on defense. Pittsburgh has had some concerns offensively, but I think the best coaching staff is Baltimore.
That's interesting because they might potentially lose both of those guys, right?
Well, they won't lose Cam Cameron. They won't lose Cameron. I think he's kind of there. He's got young kids. He wants to keep them in school. And I think people kind of have a sense that Cam's a great coach, probably better suited to be an offensive coordinator than a head coach.
Yeah.
And Rex might leave, but the other thing I think that you can't minimize here is the Ravens have a lot of free agents. And we know fear does the work of reason. And when you're going to be a free agent at the end of the year, you got to play good all the way through the year. And I think a lot of that is what drives this Ravens machine.
So if you had to pick a Pittsburgh-Baltimore winner at this point after getting rocked in round two, who would you take?
My head says Pittsburgh. My instincts say Baltimore.
Really?
You know,
why?
I mean, because I just think Baltimore's the hot team. And I think they found if you can win in Tennessee, you can win anywhere. Again, hard to beat a team three times in a row in 1 year. The Steelers played them in the first time there. They had to take the game to overtime. Flacco's arm is big enough to make one or two throws, and I think that's all it takes. I mean, that's all he did in the Tennessee game, made one or two throws. They've won two playoff games with Flacco not really playing well. I mean, let's be real honest here. I mean, I know he's made a touchdown pass, but that could have easily been an interception, the first one, where Chris Hope just kind of was unbalanced. So that's my instincts. My instincts tell me Baltimore's going to get there. Now, I know NBC's got to be rooting for Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, but that's my instinct.
Flacco, although he was good, he wasn't good. He was competent. But he made the worst pass of round two, the pass when he kind of turned around and flung it backwards to LaRon McClain, that mm-hmm. the line drive backwards lateral screen pass, that could have been a disaster. And, in Pittsburgh, he might have one or two of those, oh, no, kind of plays in him as a rookie QB one step away from the Super Bowl. So I think I'm leaning toward Pittsburgh. I really like the way Fast Willie ran in that game yesterday.
I think that's something to be said. I wrote that this morning. I think Fast Willie is going to be the difference. And I do believe Pittsburgh's offensive line, which has been the Achilles heel of the football team all year, played its best game on Sunday. By far, it played its best game.
And
San Diego could not generate any pass rush whatsoever, which ultimately was the reason why Pittsburgh had so much success.
I did not know Fast Willie was back at that level because I don't know if I would have taken San Diego. I thought he looked like old school Fast Willie.
Yeah, he did.
He was
the only guy that got benefited from the week off. I mean, let's face it, everybody else is, you know, didn't rest. The Giants and the Panthers didn't benefit from the week off, or the Titans.
And the the biggest play in that game was the Santonio Holmes punt return. Who knew? Mike Seifers, whatever we're supposed to call him now. You come the Michael Jordan of punters, and he gives up a punt return today. Just classic.
And then Sproles takes the kickoff back, and they turn the thing over again. Just when they got a chance to get back in the game, they turn it over again. But, San Diego gave a nice run, but, I think Willie Parker certainly gives them another dimension. Pittsburgh's just tough to play there. But like I said, all the indicators, Willie Parker, Pittsburgh's defense tells me Pittsburgh. My instincts tells me Baltimore.
Philly, Arizona.
I'm going to wait to confer with my 13-year-old knowledgeable guy to see who he picks first.
Oh, that's your 13-year-old expert. You got to run his picks this week on your site.
I am definitely going to do it. Yeah, the Trevor picks, yes. Arizona and Philadelphia, you know, this is an interesting matchup. Two teams live on turnovers. The Eagles create them. Arizona, you know, Arizona's a turnover team playing in a home stadium that we know gave Atlanta a lot of trouble. You know, but at the end of the day, I'm going to go with Philadelphia's defense and the hot quarterback.
There you go. And you don't think maybe Andy Reid has a couple brain farts in him? He's weeded that out of his system?
Well, you know, I just think right now the way they're playing, I mean, who knew? I mean, this is a team that all the Tampa Bay Bucks have to do is win a game, you know, and they're not even in the playoffs down the stretch. So it's that magic of Philadelphia this year. You know, Bill, you've had it in New England and Boston. Maybe it's the magic of Philly. Now, I know the Sixers aren't going to win the NBA title, so it's going to stop and end here with the Eagles.
Yeah, but if you could keep Elton Brand on the bench, your odds increase every week. If you could just not have him out there. I have one more question for you. This one's going to stun you. You're going to struggle and you're going to stammer. Compare the four remaining teams to Sopranos characters.
The four remaining teams to Sopranos characters. Oh,
this is going to be what you're going to
great question.
You're going to answer this one, and then you're going to email me 10 times afterwards saying, God, I should have said this.
Well, I'm going to say Pittsburgh is Tony.
Okay.
Very, very angry. And I'm going to say Baltimore is going to be more like Paulie.
Oh.
I would say Arizona is more like Johnny Sack. Yeah. Very deceptive. Don't really know where they're coming from. Philadelphia is I think Philadelphia is – they're too – I think they're big pussy. I think they're a big pussy. They're kind of two-faced and don't really know who they are, but at the core, they probably have a good heart.
And it's going to end with them getting shot in a boat?
Maybe it will. I just kind of did that out of my head. You know, I just try to think of them all, you know. Now you're right. Now I'm thinking about it. Maybe they are Christopher Moltisanti. I don't know. They're kind of erratic.
I like the big pussy. I agree with you. I think they're big pussy, and even their coach is built like big pussy, so that makes it even better.
Yeah, maybe that's what led me to.
Hey, on Inside the NFL last week, you had Nance on. Now,
yes.
I've always thought of Nance as kind of this goody-two-shoes, you know, the guy who smiles as the Masters jacket gets passed and is just like puts his arm around people, and it's just one of those basically a Hallmark card of a person. And Nance comes out on Inside the NFL to do this like fake trial about overtime with Phil Sims, and it's a barracuda. Just yeah. Demolishes Sims. Sims is not seen for like another 20 minutes of the show. Who knew Nance had that in him? Did you know that Nance had that in him?
Oh, one of the great debaters of all time. I really, you know, I've seen him do it. He's very, very, very well researched. I thought it was one of the great moments in television. I think if anybody didn't see Inside the NFL on Showtime, that was worth seeing. And, you know, I say this about Jim Nance all the time. As nice as he appears on television, he's even nicer in person. And so the goody two shoes it doesn't turn off. But when he gets into a debate and he has convictions, he's very strong and he has good opinions. And I think he'd be a great, great guest for you because he could talk about all the things that you enjoy, he enjoys.
I'm rethinking every thought I've ever had about Jim Nance. I feel like I could see him in some sort of road rage incident. I think he could snap. I think he has a dark side.
I think he has a lot of beliefs that he doesn't get an opportunity to share with the common people of America, and I think that gave him a forum to do it. And the producer Pete Radovich knew that, and he knew it was going to be a great television because Phil was ready to go, and it was a great day on the set because I wasn't allowed to talk to Nance the whole time as they debated this thing. And Chris Collinsworth, I think he deserves the Actor of the Year. I mean, he just walked away from it all, and he did the best thing he could do because it was just really good. It was, and that was done, Bill, in one take.
Wow. Well, you know, it's funny. I have that Tyson zone where, like, you know, athletes, when they enough things happen, where after a while, no news story will surprise you about the person. I'm putting Jim Nance in the Tyson zone after that debate performance. Now, nothing he does will surprise me now because he unleashed a side of himself that I just didn't know existed.
And he's well informed on every subject. I think the thing you'd be shocked to see, I think there's not a subject you could bring up that he wouldn't have a strong opinion one way or the other.
Does Sims show up for work this week after the beating he took?
You're talking about the all-time competitive person who is just so good at what he does. I mean, you know, it's very, you know, he is prideful in what he does. And, he shows up and he's got facts upon facts. I learned so much from being around Phil and Chris both, and that's what makes the show so much fun.
You know, it was like Hearns Hagler, and when it was over, Sims was like Hearns, where just getting basically carried around his stomach back to his corner by three handlers. That's how I felt. It was a convincing knockout win for Jim Nantz.
I thought the last scene where poor Phil got thrown under the bus with Bernard Madoff, I thought was a little unfair, you know. But it was one of the great lines in television, you know. And I think that Nantz has that uncanny ability to strike humor in a very interesting situation.
It was really good. I've enjoyed the show all year. And, you know, you've been making these TV cameos. Now I'm starting to get worried that you're going to become too big for the podcast.
Never, ever, ever. The podcast is what my life – you have no idea how many people tell me they hear me on the podcast.
Oh, that's
incredible.
Nice.
And you know, hopefully you're going to check your iTunes, and I think you should have broke your barrier by now, haven't you?
I can't figure it out. I don't know who listens to these NPR podcasts. There's like 40 NPR podcasts that just people, I guess it's an older audience or something. I don't get it. I'm kind of floating in and out of the top 25. My problem is I'm too competitive. I'm basically Jim Nantz.
Yeah.
I had that switch. I just want to destroy everybody. So, you're picking
Philadelphia, Baltimore.
Okay. Philadelphia, Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an interesting Super Bowl.
It would be. You know, the only reason I'm doing it, I have no logic. I couldn't make any picks work last week based on logic. So this week I'm going to do the George opposite and go no logic at all. And it was the game that Donovan McNabb got benched in was the Pittsburgh-Philadelphia game. So that's what I think should be the rematch.
It was the Baltimore-Philly game.
Right, Baltimore-Philly game. He got benched in the second half, so I'm just going to go. It's going to be his return.
Interesting. So you're saying the media day angle would be everyone would show a lot of clips from that game. How ironic. Wow. It was the turning point of the season. I like this.
Yeah. You know, and let me say this. The 2002, I got a phone call from the Jim Nantz, who I call the great one, and he says to me, you are at the Raiders. He says, you're going to the Super Bowl and you're going to play Tampa Bay.
Well, here's something that I just thought of. The Cardinals in week 17 beat the Seahawks, another bird. In round one, they beat the Falcons, a bird. In round two, they beat the Panthers, not a bird. But in round three, playing the Eagles, a bird. Yeah. And then in the Super Bowl, potentially the Ravens, yet another bird.
A bird. Yes.
I wonder if that's ever happened before. I'm going to have to look.
I don't know if there's been this many animal mascots make the Final Four of any time I've ever seen in my life. I don't know. It's remarkable, though.
It's another weird year. It's another weird year in the NFL.
It's a weird year that you just want to kind of figure it all out. It's tough for me to say. Logic does not prevail here.
All right. Keep plugging away. NationalFootballPost.com. Mike Lombardi. It's the year of Lombardi. We're all witnesses.
All right, Bill. Thanks.
Talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
All right, before we wrap it up, new feature I wanted to start on the podcast. In my columns, I throw in stuff that, you know, I'll throw stuff out and the readers will say, yeah, and they'll add a good point about it or they'll have some sort of answer that I solicited. And somehow I never end up sneaking that theory or that point or whatever they made back into the column because it might be dated or whatever. So I thought maybe I'd do that at the end of the podcast. In this one, 2 weeks ago in my football column, I wrote about Castaway. Now, and how the last scene drives me crazy, where Tom Hanks, he drives away from Helen Hunt's house, and he's like probably like two blocks away, and Helen Hunt screams his name. Somehow he hears it in the rainstorm. She runs out. They make out. She's soaking wet. Then he brings her back to the house, and she gets out. And meanwhile, her husband, who marries this lady who was engaged to this other guy and who died in a plane crash, and now this guy miraculously comes back to life, and this guy somehow sleeps through the whole thing. And that drives me crazy, and I don't understand why he's not basically sitting in the living room with a shotgun ready to shoot everybody. Some people made a good point. Here's the deal. Hanks is gone for 4 years, and I can't give one reader credit for this because a lot of people emailed about this. Hanks has gone for 4 years in the island. Now, he comes back and he meets Helen Hunt, and she has a kid that is about 2 years old. So let's go with Will from White Plains, because he did the best thing. When he gets back, Hunt is married and has a child that appears to be about 2 years old. Do the math here. Figure on a year-long courtship before marriage, 9 months of pregnancy, and the kid is around two. Add it up, and you get just about 4 years, the exact time Hanks was on the island. So how long did she wait? How long did Helen Hunt's character wait after Hanks disappeared before she started dating again? Was it a week or was it 2 weeks? It's a great point. Because if you watch that movie, there's a scene where she's, I think the kid is eating in the kitchen table, and the kid's at least two. I have a 3.5-year-old and I have a 14-month-old. You can kind of guess within a month once you have kids of how old other kids are. That kid was maybe a tiny bit over two, and you throw in the 10-month pregnancy. It's not nine. It's actually almost 10. And then you throw in the wedding. So I'm guessing she mourned Hanks for maybe 4 weeks. So thanks again. That scene has now been ruined for me in two different ways, and I'm even more upset about it than I was. Every time it comes on now, I'm going to be bothered in five different ways. So anyway, so that was the end of a new feature, which we'll have to come up with a new name for. Coming back this week with two more podcasts, guests to be determined. Stay tuned. See you then.
So I get the sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.